Live from the studios in Eugene, Oregon, it's Oregon Update with your host, Cliff and Robin, along with former Lane County Commissioner Cindy Wheeldryer and Pastor Bradley. Join us for a roundtable discussion of what's in the news today. And now, here's your host, Cliff and Robin.
It's Wednesday again, and we are back despite other people's requests to go away. We're still here. Anyways, Cliff and Cindy are out on assignment today, and Bradley is joining us. But right now, he's out literally chasing a dog that escaped on him from our remote location in Cottage Grove. So, yes, I'm fighting the urge to start playing the music, Who Let the Dogs Out? Anyways, our main topic today is alternative fuels. And if you would like to chime in on that, give us a call anytime, 646-721-9887, and any other topic that you have of interest that you would like to talk about. With me in the main studio today is Mimi. Say hello, Mimi.
Hello, Mimi.
She's so cooperative.
And we know nothing about alternative fuel.
Well, we know a little bit. We'll do the best we can. We have some people coming in on the chat room, and also, the topic for alternative fuels was suggested by Mac Wing last week. He's in the chat room now. Hopefully, he'll give us a call in. And I have a couple announcements I'd like to make before we get started, including a what the heck are they thinking. To start with, January 26th of this year, we had Joe Dyville from Angel Acres Horse Haven Rescue. Say that three times fast. Angel Acres Horse Haven Rescue, which is a 501c3 corporation located in Glendale, Pennsylvania. She was with us on the show to talk about her organization, which is dedicated to saving horses who are abused, neglected, or abandoned, or bound for slaughter for human consumption, and how they help them to be rehabilitated and brought back to health, and then they find suitable homes for them. However, as anybody who has ever raised horses realizes, this raising a horse does not come cheap. In addition to medical care that the horses receive, hay is one of the most expensive items that they have to deal with. So they are currently asking for your help, and if you could contribute with their hay drive, they would greatly appreciate it. Anything would help. Donations as little as $10 would be greatly appreciated. You can visit them on their website at angelanchorshorsehavenrescue.com or the link on our show page today.
Hey, I'm back.
And Bradley is back.
All right, Bradley.
He got the dog.
I got the horse.
The horse, too.
Yeah.
And my second announcement I have going along with today's show, this is brought to our attention by one of our listeners, Mac Wing, and which is also the suggested topic for this week, is the NH3 8th Annual Fuel Conference, and the Key to Energy Independence, which is being held at the Red Lion Hotel on the river in Jansen Beach in Portland, Oregon, September 18th through the 21st. So if you get a chance, check that out. And that's the end of the announcements. Bradley, do you have anything? Okay, Bradley's probably still chasing the dog.
I really don't have a whole lot yet, but I'll think of something.
Okay, and we'll get to the what the heck are they thinking, and then to our main topic.
You have got to be kidding me. What the heck were they thinking? Can you actually believe they did that?
It's Robin's What the Heck Are They Thinking Award, where Robin picks out some of the dumbest and most ridiculous headlines of the week. And now, with this week's picks, here's Robin.
And this week's award once again goes out to the Oregon Legislature, which is always known for a good laugh. Passes House Bill 34. Actually, I'm going to stop that one because that's an old one and my mouse died. This week's award goes out to the Orlando Police Department, who said they arrested three people who violated a city ordinance for feeding the homeless in Lake Eola Park. The act of feeding the homeless actually requires a permit and limits a permit to 2 permits per year within a 2-mile radius of City Hall. So they say don't feed the animals or the homeless in Orlando, Florida. And if you have a dispute over your medical bill, do not pay your bill in pennies. A man in Vernal, Utah decided to, because he wasn't too happy with his medical bill, decided to pay his $25 bill with 2,500 pennies. And then, after dumping it on the counter, demanded that the staff counted them. Well, he got arrested for disorderly conduct, which now took that $25 bill to an additional $140.
All right, good thinking.
So next time you have a dispute,
give them those pennies.
Give them those pennies. Anyways, on to our main topic, alternative fuels, and we have a caller on the line, area code 309. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hello. This is the listener, Mockwing. So I'm otherwise Daniel Miller is my real name. It's not a too hazardous thing to say publicly, I suppose. But yeah, so I brought up the topic and brought up the conference going on in Portland this fall. I'm working as an intern with the NH3 Fuel Association, so got a bit of a specialty. I can speak in general on a few things renewable and alternative, but my specialty is anhydrous ammonia, NH3, as the other hydrogen. We've heard of the hydrogen economy.
Uh-huh.
But this is a little bit better, we think. So, yeah, that's my shtick, you could say. And thanks for having this topic.
You're very welcome. Now, hydrogen, that's you want to tell us a little bit about it in case people don't understand what it entails?
Oh, sure. Yeah, so you remember back in middle school science or high school science or whatever, the periodic table, that big chart with squares on it. Maybe this is dumbing it down a little bit, but hydrogen is number one. It has one proton, one neutron. Sometimes has more than one neutron, depending on the kind it is, the isotope they call it. But one proton, one electron. It's the most common element in the universe, but it doesn't occur very naturally by itself on Earth because it likes to stick to other atoms and pair up and form bonds and such. So we call the fuels that we use today hydrocarbons. And that's because there's a water with a carbon, H2O and carbon. The H2 is in water, H2O, two hydrogens, one oxygen.
Uh-huh.
So in the hydrocarbon fuels that we currently use, a lot of the energy is existing where those hydrogens are sticking to other things. So if we can figure out how to limit the amount of carbon that we use in the sense that the actual energy is where that hydrogen is sticking, then if we can stick these hydrogens to another hydrogen, that's where we get the H2 for the traditional hydrogen economy. But the ammonia economy tries to stick these hydrogens onto nitrogen, three hydrogens to one nitrogen, and you're still getting the energy in those hydrogen bonds. So in the long term, scientists call our transition towards less and less carbon in our fuel and energy usage, they call it decarbonization. And there's some really exciting opportunities for the future in this space, both in industry and in for the environment and for lots of applications. Was that a good story? Did that make sense?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. But isn't the drawback on hydrogen, though, because it is if I remember my physics a little bit, very explosive, hard to handle or store safely, and it takes a little bit of energy to create?
Right. That's a lot with the pure hydrogen economy. It is because of the small two-atom typical hydrogen, it does want to move around and interact with things, including the air, and that's what it combusts with. It when it explodes like that in the laboratory or burns, combining with the oxygen and combusting to actually make water, and that's what it puts out whenever it does combust. Mm-hmm. Whenever we can use it safely with the right protocols, then it is possible to handle it safely. But part of what ammonia does too is that it changes the safety profile. It makes it safer in some ways, but there's new hazards, so you have to handle that safely too. Just like you've got to handle gasoline safely, you got to handle diesel safely, you got to handle any energy source or fuel safely, because that's the nature of energy. Whenever you're converting one form of energy to another, there's a movement of matter, or there's a release of energy, and there's movement and there's heat, and so
my name's Brad, Pastor Brad here. Welcome to the show, by the way. I was wondering, have they come up with any way to deal with the exhaust gases? Because I know it turns them to some active poisonous issues and become explosive too. So what have they come up with to deal with that?
As far as when you combust anhydrous ammonia, there is a slight amount of nitrous oxide that is produced, but actually you can use the ammonia fuel in, or just some other source of NH3 in a catalytic process to remove that nitrous oxide. So there are processes for removing those hazardous NOx emissions at the point of combustion, or like just after in the exhaust. I'm not exactly sure where in the system, but in the energy conversion system of the machine, there are methods for that. So,
right.
Yeah, and even it's usually only with a poorly tuned engine that you get very much nitrous oxide. And
uh-huh.
Even with current engines also produce a certain amount of nitrous oxide, and these ammonia engines are even comparable to what's currently on the road anyway. So I'm not quite sure what process they have for current engines in dealing with that, but to single out trying to think that ammonia engines by themselves are any worse than what's already there is a misperception. So long and short of it, yeah, there are catalytic processes for removing that nitrous oxide.
Interesting.
Can a regular engine be converted to run hydrogen?
Yeah, they're working, for instance, in Iowa, the Hydrogen Engine Center. Both direct hydrogen and ammonia are being looked at. And I know more about the ammonia side than the hydrogen internal combustion engines, but I do know that, at least for ammonia, both spark ignited and diesel-like compression engines, additionally turbines and any primary genset can run off of ammonia. I'm not exactly remembering the details on hydrogen, in part because, I actually started out with a vision for my little hometown in West Central Illinois called Macomb, for them to be a model hydrogen city, but I got around to Googling a bunch of stuff, found out that ammonia looked better, and fit with some of what the ammonia community folks were already doing. And so I concentrated more of my attention on ammonia, and unfortunately I've forgotten some of my previous knowledge about hydrogen. So I'm a little bit rusty, and I'll ask for the patience of your audience on that note. So.
That's okay. Ammonia, though, isn't that a little bit more corrosive than hydrogen?
Well, not in carbon steel pipelines, actually. To human body cells, it is hazardous. You don't want to breathe it. You don't want to have the liquid touch your skin. There are the safety measures that will need to be in place. But it's, as far as I understand it, it's not poisonous. Like, what actually happens is that when the NH3 molecule contacts the cell, it removes water from the cell. So it kind of dries you up. And that's the hazard. It's the removal of the water from the cells that is the cause of the hazard. It's not so much that it's getting into your body and causing you to have a bad chemical reaction within your body. It's taking the water away from your cells.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the Midwest, though, with anhydrous ammonia as a fertilizer for corn, it's also a fertilizer for wheat and potatoes in some places, it's very commonly handled. And the farmers have a very good safety record. There are a few accidents every now and again, and there are the needs for the hazardous materials response teams to be able to respond to these larger commercial or industrial applications. And there's even at Iowa State a, what do they call it? It's a quantitative risk analysis report that describes the hazard profiles for propane, LP, as compared to anhydrous ammonia, as compared to gasoline. And each one is slightly different, but each were similar, and actually the NH3 was just about as safe as gasoline, and in some perspectives safer, in the sense that if you smell it, because it does have a very particular odor, if you mm-hmm. smell it, you're going to go away from it. You're going to walk away from it or run away from the scene, as compared to gasoline, which may not be as pungent of an odor immediately, or perhaps LP. Depending on the nature of the scenario, the safety profile will differ a little bit, but it's very comparable. So that's why I stick with it. I mean, I'm an intern with the group, but other than having an agricultural background and looking for practical decarbonized solutions, it's not
now,
perfect ammonia, but
ammonia is stored as a gaseous state when used as a fuel. Is that correct?
It would depend on the design of the vehicle. Compressed gas is one option. I'm not sure how well a cold storage on a vehicle to have it as a liquid on the vehicle would work. It seems like it could be reasonably feasible, because it doesn't have to get all that cold to store it as a liquid. Mm-hmm. And
doesn't have to be cooled to 33 degrees?
That sounds in that range. I'm more of the marketing guy than the direct technical guy. And
okay.
So I, again, apologize. I'm rusty on the specifics. But I do know, though, that whenever it's stored commercially in these huge round containers that are the size of buildings, it is stored as a liquid in that case. The nurse tanks that are pulled behind the pickup trucks in the farmer's fields, that's a liquid. I think that's a liquid still because it was compressed cold and it stayed cold, but then it's when it comes out of those nurse tanks and the fertilizer applicator, it again becomes a gas, and it interacts with the soil so that it stays under the soil and does what it has to. But yeah, they call it the phrase that they use, the NH3 Fuel Association, is a carbon-free, NH3 carbon-free liquid fuel. So the original question of whether on a vehicle it would be a gas or a liquid, the moniker, they do emphasize the liquid part of it. So, yeah. I do know, too, though, that it is about one-half energy density of gasoline. So to get the same range, we would need a tank twice the size of a regular gas tank. So it's a little inconvenient, but if we're going to save the planet and have some of the other benefits of the next generation infrastructure and fuels and everything, I think we can live with a little bit bigger tank, because that's I think that amount is actually meeting or exceeding the Department of Energy hydrogen storage goals for their hydrogen car stuff. So, but yeah, DOE doesn't seem to pay much attention to ammonia, and we're not entirely sure why. In fact, one of the folks from the Clinton Climate Initiative, and this is in a newsletter from the Hydrogen Engine Center, one of the folks that they're taking a bunch of these ammonia fuel industry folks to the California Air Resources Board to see if, like June 21st, they're going there. They're trying to get some recognition for ammonia as to be recognized as a fuel, because we don't even really have that name for it. We don't even really have the word fuel attached to it officially. So they might think of it as hydrogen storage. They might think of it as energy storage, but it's a smaller community that emphasizes the fuel component for getting it to the end user of transportation in vehicles. So, of course, even if it doesn't go as far to get the name fuel, it could still have very important uses in large-scale infrastructure, in fertilizer, in OTEC, ocean thermal energy conversion, energy transport to, if we put some OTEC plant ships out in the tropics of the Pacific, you could manufacture anhydrous ammonia and then ship it back to the coastline to transfer that energy that you collected from the temperature differentials. So
let me jump in here for just a second. 646-721-9887. We have Mac Wayne on the line. We're talking about alternative fuels. If you'd like to call in and ask him a question, 646-721-9887. Chat room is open if you also have a question there, including our other chat room at www.krbnradio.com. Have to do that from time to time.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I can climb up on my soapbox and get talking for a while, so I appreciate you stepping in and reminding me there's other important things besides this ammonia stuff. So,
we appreciate it.
Yeah.
Producing the ammonia, though, is it cost effective? I know that I think Chevy overseas tried in 1981. They converted a Chevy Impala to operate on ammonia as fuel, and I don't see the results of that. But to produce it based on our current conversion of fossil fuels, do you think it's cost effective in that way?
Well, I'm hopeful that we go the renewables route for ammonia. There are a couple presentations cataloged at Iowa State University about using fossil fuels like coal to produce the anhydrous ammonia. In fact, that's how China generates most of its ammonia that it uses for fertilizer or other industrial uses. So it is being done that way. It is cost-effective that way, but I also think that it's cost-effective when the infrastructure is scaled and placed strategically to do it renewably and do it profitably too. You might not, I haven't done the calculations exactly, you might not get a quarterly return on investment immediately putting in the renewable systems, because you've got to develop both the production and the consumption side of it.
Uh-huh.
So it's the typical chicken and egg dilemma. Do we put in the infrastructure first and then get markets for it, or do we get the markets first and then produce to fill those markets? But at least with ammonia, there is the need among farmers to have a stable price on a domestic fertilizer, which is not seen with the traditional hydrogen economy. So there's mm-hmm. less of a chicken and egg problem with ammonia economy as compared to a pure hydrogen economy. So if we tweak things, we will get an energy return, we will get a profit return, but that's part of the difficulty for going forward with large projects, is that a lot of the people who have the cash want to see a very quick return of more cash for the cash that they put out. So, well, long-term investments are not the common thing that we do these days, I suppose. Even we see that with our credit cards too, I guess. But
absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking here that, you know, because the principles of ammonia have an extremely low boiling points, melting points, and that it is volatile, that in a consumer, I'm trying to think of a way to put it nicely, a lot of people can't walk and chew gum at the same time, so it has to be really foolproof, so to speak.
Right, right, yeah. And that's why at least at the previous website, they had the Ammonia Fuel Network website. They had a link to super safe ammonia storage as one of the initiatives of some of these startup companies, because these folks have recognized that we've got to make it safe for grandma and grandpa and baby and everybody on board. So,
well, it's actually been used for quite a long time. I mean, it was first used for, you know, in space for the famous X-15 rocket plane.
Yeah.
It was used mm-hmm. for fueling that. And it's also used for, in some parts of the country, for coolant systems for refrigeration. So it's like,
yep.
you know, it seems like it would be really easy to adapt into the everybody's life, seems to me.
I think so. At least it shows that a lot of the infrastructure, the working parts are in place to some degree, and it's a matter of double dutying what's already there as compared to having to reinvent the wheel. If we like lace together what we've already got, we can again, as compared to pure hydrogen, pure hydrogen would need special pipelines that would not get embrittled, whereas the regular carbon steel does not have a problem with ammonia. Regular carbon steel, however, gets brittle after a certain amount of time with pure hydrogen in it. So, there's nice things already in place, and I for one am I don't know why ammonia doesn't get more attention than it does, because after looking at it a while, it is a pretty pretty attractive story.
That's yeah, I agree.
My opinion, but
you hear more about hydrogen fuel cells, but to be honest, I haven't really heard that much about ammonia either. I mean, we know ammonia as a cleaner, which I'm assuming is different, and also, as Bradley pointed out, it was used in like the old motorhome refrigerators for a while until they went to. I don't know why they got rid of it, but you don't hear about ammonia much anymore these days.
Just for cleaning,
yeah. Yeah, right.
Yeah, the cleaning, that's aqueous ammonia. That's NH3 dissolved in water, and that's different than anhydrous, which is NH3 by itself. There's no water molecule dissolved
right?
in it.
That's a pure form of ammonia?
Yeah, that's how we'd have to do it with this energy stuff, is only a bunch of NH3 molecules grouped together, nothing else mixed in with them.
So how do they address the issue of, because we know ammonia is burns a lot slower than petrol and air. So maybe I missed you saying that already, but what are some of the things that we can do about that?
Oh, yeah. That's actually one of the safety features, is that at one atmosphere of pressure, it does not combust. But whenever you put it under pressure and then, like, with a spark, it'll combust that way. Or with diesel, it is recommended that a 5% regular diesel mixture go in with 95% ammonia to help facilitate the combustion within the diesel-like combustion chamber. And yeah, that, I don't know if there's a way to get away from that, but at least we'll have some degree of biofuels, biodiesel, that could very, very nicely, very easily at 5% complement the ammonia in the heavy duty diesel like engines.
Right.
So yeah.
Interesting, yeah.
Yep.
So with the the example you just gave, I'm assuming that the ammonia to be mixed in would be in a liquid form?
Oh, to be able to do that? My cell phone was choppy there. Could you say that again?
Sure. In the example you just gave about mixing the ammonia with diesel, to do that, the ammonia would have to be in a liquid form, I'm assuming.
I'm not sure how exactly they mix it. It might be in the carburetor or fuel injector, where it's a, you might store two different tanks, a tank of ammonia and a smaller tank of diesel, and then squirt them in at the same time.
Oh, okay.
Or somehow mix them in a pre-mix. I'm not under the impression that they mix the liquids, but some kind of premix before the combustion of that, because in the combustion chamber, it is only a small amount of vapors, and it by the time it's in that chamber, be it by going through the carburetor or going through the fuel injector, it's not really liquid so much anymore. It's kind of all dispersed into oxygen, because of course what you're combining in the combustion process is you're combining the oxygen with the fuel, and that's what makes it explode and put the power out. So who knows, maybe they'll put oxygen tanks on vehicles too and get a perfect combustion. That's how they did it with the X-15 plane. They had a tank of anhydrous ammonia and a tank of oxygen, and they had a balanced chemical reaction at the rocket nozzle, as far as I understand that mm-hmm. example.
Yeah, they used turbine pumps to get the flow correct. What I thought was interesting about all that was they were able to, with the liquid oxygen and the anhydrous ammonia was that it would, you could shut it off and you could restart it if you needed to later on.
Cool.
Yeah, the by mixing the pure oxygen or whatever, I mean, you're right. I mean, even in today's cars, you know, the having taken regular oxygen is not, it reduces the efficiency versus pure oxygen. Of course, nitrous is also very fun.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of looking over more of the situation here. I think you are correct in by adding the diesel to it as a doping effect, like they do in for silicon wafers and stuff. It would have a mixing chamber, then go right into the cylinder. Is from what I'm seeing on here.
So Brian,
okay.
Brian, is your name Brian or Ryan?
I'm Daniel.
Daniel, I'm sorry. what is the main stumbling block right now, besides, you know, all the hoops that we have to jump through government? But what is the main stumbling block to get this stuff going?
Sure. If you looked at it from the consumer side, it's the emotional reaction to the word ammonia. That's, in fact, why they switched the name to NH3 Fuel Association, is because when you say the word ammonia, people think the cleaning liquid, and they like, oh, that, oh, we don't like ammonia. So that's from the Joe off the street perspective. Otherwise, I think it's just an awareness problem that you could call it a marketing problem, you could call it an educational problem, but the knowledge, the information just hasn't reached people. You get some of the big names out there, they hear about the story, like there was Matthew Simmons, he was an energy investment banker. He founded the Ocean Energy Institute. They're over in Maine. They're doing some pretty interesting work. But he became a fan of NH3. But then, unfortunately, he passed away, so the industry lost one of the influential energy champions for the solution. But I think it's an information flow problem.
I would agree about that. Yeah,
I would too, and like to reiterate what you were saying about ammonia basically has a bad name for it, and I believe you addressed this earlier, is that as far as the toxicity level of ammonia, usually for humans and other mammals, it's from what I'm reading here, is not really that specific of a problem, because we have systems in our bloodstream that can dispose of it through urine. The only danger is that fish and other amphibians lack that mechanism, and that could be a problem for them. I'm sure that could be addressed somehow in the future.
Sure. And you do hear about nitrogen runoff causing some problems from fertilizer down in the Gulf of Mexico. And, of course, that was the big story about problems in the Gulf before the BP oil rig disaster, but we do generally want to keep the nitrogen where we want it. If it goes places that aren't good, then it's not good. But if it goes to places where it's good and beneficial, then it's good and beneficial. And you just got to have the control mechanisms and realize that just like something that's supposed to be in a particular place at a particular time doing a particular thing, it's good. Like fire in a fireplace warms a house, but fire out of a fireplace could burn down a house. So, it's something that needs to be managed. And that's the case with lots of things, I suppose. Just has to be.
Go ahead, Bradley.
I think we shoot ourselves in our own foot, because, like, being a pastor, I often tell people, you know, sometimes you're so heavenly minded, you're no earthly good. The same goes when I my humble opinion with the environmentalists. We're so environmentally way out there that we're no earthly good. And because we're so concerned about destroying the environment, which I'm very strong for that too, not wasting and doing things irresponsibly. But I just think we're too far on one side, and we're not going to get ahead if we're going to keep going back and being in so much fear.
Well, and on that same line, how are they? I'm assuming that we're doing research in the U.S. Are you aware of making it commercially available for, as a fuel?
Most of it's being done by this small nonprofit, the NH3 Fuel Association. There are a couple other companies that are have a presence online that could be stumbled upon by researching the topic, but it really isn't getting national attention. It's not really getting much mainstream media attention. It's not getting much United Nations attention. I don't know about United Nations global community attention. Some elements in big business have heard the story, and they're looking for the opportune times, I guess, because you got people like, if you look at the attendance list or the presentations from these conferences, there's people in significant positions of influence that are aware. It's just that there's a number of factors that haven't congealed. And I, like we were saying before, I think it's a lot of it an information flow problem. It might even be, unfortunately, a taking for granted of food and water, which we will take for granted less in the coming century. But with the Green Revolution and even Haber-Bosch, whenever they did ammonia synthesis, they solved the early 1900s fertilizer problem by making anhydrous ammonia synthetically, as compared to mining nitrates from the Atacama deserts of Chile, I believe it is, or Argentina, one of those two, the South America anyway. So the nitrogen availability for plants and for the proteins in our food supply has been so exponentially available for such a long time, we just kind of forgot about the importance of nitrogen. And so that's connected. Maybe it's a little bit far from the fuel side of it, but what was that?
Well, and as you were saying, as well, as far as we don't think about ammonia,
Fertilizer. We don't think about the fertilizer that goes into our food. It's just there, and yeah.
Right. And other things ammonia is used for, like in making plastics and pharmaceuticals and
Yeah.
And other stuff. You know, you just like you say, you just don't really give it that much thought. And maybe it is the way to go here. You need to look more closely at it. But
I think. It might not be a silver bullet, as they come to say in a lot of the renewable discussions, and we might need a silver shotgun approach, but if we got a silver shotgun, we might be having at least one slug in there and maybe some birdshot around, tucked around that slug. Maybe the slug is ammonia. That's from the redneck background I got to deer hunting and everything, so... you know about shotguns. The slug is that big bullet inside a shell that they shoot at deer, as compared to birdshot, which is the pellets that if you're shooting at one of those orange clay discs or going hunting for birds, or like Cheney, that was birdshot. It's a good thing Cheney didn't have a slug whenever he had his accident. So But the difference between that, trying to use the shotgun analogy for ammonia, maybe ammonia is the slug and the other parts are the birdshot, but we'll see, I guess. I'm hopeful. I think we've got a lot more reason to hope about where the energy future is headed than reason to fret.
Hey, Daniel, going back to what I said earlier about my comment about being so heavenly minded and earthly good, and then on the environmental side of it too, when you're out marketing and for this new energy source, what kind of fear level do you see about the new idea?
Yeah, it's comparable to how it's been handled here on the radio show. I do most of my cold contacts to professionals. Oh, got a call coming in. Can I call you back? And got to fix it.
Absolutely.
I'll
yeah.
call back in a bit. Yeah.
All thanks. Right. Thank you, Danny.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, he's got some personal business to take care of. We do appreciate him calling. And you can call right now, too, 646-721-9887, if you'd like to chime in on this topic or anything else. We do have the chat room open, both of them, at the blogtalkradio.com chat room, or on our own chat room at krbnradio.com. We do not need a login, and you can. The difference between the two is that you can comment on the topic if you don't have a Blog Talk account. And again, questions, comments, talk at krbnradio.com. But we'd like you to call us right now at 646-721-9887. And we definitely appreciate Daniel for chiming in. He's works with the NH3 conference, with the 8th annual conference is coming up in Portland, September 18th through 21st. And you can see a link to that on our show page if you're interested for more information. But one of the things that I was kind of curious about, and I was going to ask him, and hopefully Daniel will be able to call back in the time remaining, is the price at the pump compared to what we're paying now or other alternative fuels. Like, for example, if you're converted over to propane, which propane is a fairly clean-burning fuel, and it's about half the price of what you would be paying at the pump at the moment. You can jump in there anytime, Bradley.
Oh, sorry. I was focused on, I was thinking deeply about our last conversation I was having with Daniel. Sorry, I was in La La Land there for a minute. You can repeat yourself.
I was just commenting about a propane, which is a clean burning fuel, which is, I think propane's about $2.50 a gallon roughly right now, which is about less than half of what it is at the pump, and a regular engine can be converted over to it. However, propane can also be pretty hazardous to handle.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. It's just, you know, it's really amazing in how many resources that we have that are being researched that we don't hear about. And a lot of it has to do with the protection of our environment. And I think that'd be a great subject sometime to talk about global warming and things like that, because I have some of my own research and facts on the issue. So, and that's a whole other subject.
Absolutely. Kind of along the same line, too, is speaking of alternative fuels, is like here in Oregon, for example, a lot of the funds for road maintenance is taken from the gas tax. And, you know, you go pay at the pump and you pay, I think we're up to 30, 35 cents a gallon when you include the federal. And the state of Oregon has been working on a project. I think it's called RUFTIP, RUFTIP or something like that. Basically, it's installing a GPS system in your car to track how many miles that you drive in order to charge you per mile, or, well, based on the time of the day, where you drive, and congestion. Oregon is also proposing I'm scanning my notes here, proposing or has either started for the electric vehicles, because, you know, electric vehicles, you don't pay any road tax, so they're I believe they're going to charge you 1.3 cents per mile that you pay at the end of the year instead of the GPS system where all the miles you pay for, well, in short, the GPS system, you go fill up, drive around, then when you come back, when you fill up the pump again, it goes ahead and communicates with the pump, and at that point, it says, okay, well, in addition to the 15 gallons that you just went ahead and acquired, you now owe us, you know, $5 in fuel taxes. So there, that can be one way as how much it's going to cost you more to drive the vehicle is maybe a deterrent to actually implementing the different types of alternative fuels. And we have Daryl back on the line. Welcome back, Daryl.
Yeah. Hey, Daniel.
Yeah,
Daniel. Sorry.
Good to be on.
See, he's been Brian and
I have it here in front of me too. I just got. I'm searching for my notes. I apologize, Daniel.
no problem. Yeah, I that was Mom and Dad calling. I'm one of the boomerang generation. Living back at home while I'm studying for my MBA, and they're headed back home from a road trip to help out Grandma. So that was good to hear from them. But okay. I'm back, so yeah.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm just curious.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was curious about your radio show. I know you through Blog Talk, and you have a land-based terrestrial radio station as well?
We had one which was rebroadcast on KOHI in St. Helens, and I can't go into too much details, but we are in talk with another terrestrial broadcast station, yes.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I was just curious because I was looking through the Blog Talk shows, and I found the Oregon connection and with the Portland conference coming up and the radio show that you guys have there in Eugene. So I did study a little bit in my undergrad down in the Ashland area too.
Oh.
Interestingly, Pastor, what's your name again? I'm sorry.
Brad. Okay.
Yeah, I do the same thing. Maybe you've heard of the Oregon extension of, it used to be of Houghton College, now it's of Eastern College. They've got a little.
Is that the study. OSU Extension Service you're thinking of?
Well, it's not Oregon State University. It's a small group. They have about 35 or so students each fall semester called the Oregon Extension. And you heard of them?
Yes.
Yeah, so I studied with them a little bit too. So I have a fond place in my heart for Oregon, for what I know of the state. And hopefully I'll be able to make it to Portland this fall. Not quite sure yet if I'll be able to do that, but...
Well, if you do, let us know. Maybe we can hook up for lunch or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll be in touch on that then.
Yeah.
Give us a report from the conference.
That could work too. Yeah. We'll see what happens. And so I've got a bit of a faith-based component to the work that I've been involved in, and it's a interesting thing figuring out how to, like, Jesus has said, and at times render unto Caesar what is Caesar's and unto God what is God's, and how to be in the world but not of the world, those kinds of sayings of Jesus. It makes for a creative tension in my mind for how we're supposed to love our neighbor and love God just like Jesus said, those are the greatest commandments. So, anyway, since you mentioned the heavenly-minded thing, I experienced the same tension. So,
appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you heard any being in the energy field? Have you heard anybody talking about using mercury at all for doing any powering? Not the planet Mercury, but...
Oh,
you know, right.
That'd be a little hard to get in your gas tank.
Yeah. Yeah. Mercury is a heavy metal that I'm sure you know that. But it's quite interesting.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Before you comment on that, what I want to say is when they were making discoveries in the pyramids, and one of the oldest pyramids that they did some discovery in, I don't remember the name of it right offhand, but they found a shape of a bird, and they reproduced it and actually flies when they added a little piece on the end, a rudder. And they found some mercury findings, and they're connecting all that and saying that mercury was used as one of the power sources back then. It opens up a whole new world of thought on that, but I just wonder if you heard anything on that.
Well, interestingly, my uncle, he unfortunately passed away in 2007, but he was into Egyptology, and he had mentioned interesting theories about Egyptian energy means, and I never really looked at it all that closely, but antiquity might have, very possibly could have some things that could be helpful for us today. It's a big world, no question there. So,
go ahead.
Yeah, I guess I could say for myself, I try to follow Jesus, but I try to keep an open mind too. So I listened to the Egyptology of my uncle. He even sold PVC pyramids that people could sit under. So we had some interesting family discussions about all kinds of natural and supernatural possibilities. And so you mentioned the Egypt mercury energy source. That's interesting. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. Of course, mercury has this little thing about being really dangerous to handle. So,
right. Right.
You know, little details there.
Yeah. Well, it's a part of some of those compact fluorescents too. We got to be careful with those.
Exactly.
Light-emitting diode is the next technology. I don't think they have to have mercury in the LED bulbs, so maybe we've cycled through that crisis in due time.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, and what a lot of people don't know is that the majority of the incandescent bulb is going to be outlawed for production in 2012.
Yeah, I'd heard something like that, yeah.
But anyways, I've got... three little letters that kind of help curtail new types of alternative fuels and energy. Actually, this little organization kind of gets in the way of a lot of things, known as the EPA. And one of the things I was reading about is on the EPA's website is the alternative fuel conversion, where under 42 USC 7522 blah blah blah. If you modify your car to an alternative fuel without explicit permission, I'm summarizing roughly, it can be a really bad violation, especially if you want to sell your car. So have you run into your experience with the NH3, any details on that?
I do know that they're wanting to be very certain that they're being... in line with the laws and regulations. I myself haven't converted any of my vehicles, or I'm more of a book knowledge and theory person than hands-on do it person yet. I'd like to be more hands-on, but haven't got there, haven't gotten much money to tinker around with either. But yeah, it's my impression the NH3 community is trying to be above the board on the laws and the regulations. I don't know. There was a guy, I guess, in Canada. I think maybe you mentioned this one. I'm not sure. But a number of years ago had an ammonia conversion on a car.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what he did, but there's YouTube videos on him. I don't know how he dealt with the laws and regulations. And University of Michigan, or Minnesota, one of the two. Maybe it's Wisconsin. It's one of those Great Lakes states. It's the yellow truck on the website that traveled across the states. I don't know how they did that one either. But those are the two practical examples of conversions to ammonia that I'm aware of, and uh-huh. that I don't know what they did about that. But otherwise, they, of course, know that if it's going to go big and go commercial, it needs to be above the board and all legalized.
Now, how much do you think it would cost at the pump? Versus?
With the properly scaled system with a certain set of technologies, we can get it at $4 per gallon gasoline energy equivalent.
Mm-hmm.
But with some of the emerging and hopefully to be commercialized, for instance, solid state ammonia synthesis, if that can be put in, I think the number that can be brought down to about $2.50 a gallon gasoline energy equivalent. So competitive, especially with the emerging technologies, comparative with the older Haber-Bosch, for instance. To make even these Haber-Bosch plants economical, they have to be priced at about $1.5 billion with a B. And so that's quite a bit of infrastructure to put in to get even that $4 a gallon. So I think that's what it was.
Well,
yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, because speaking of infrastructure, like they're doing in Oregon with electric cars, the state is putting in charging stations all over the place, even though the electric car hasn't really caught on that big in Oregon, but they're in preparation of doing it, which
right.
you know, once it's there, will reduce the cost, obviously. Assuming,
right.
of course, technology doesn't change by the time everybody starts using it.
Well, I think electric cars have their place, and especially for the short-range commute on a daily basis, it seems to be a pretty viable solution. And I think they may have missed the boat on leapfrogging past EVs and going straight to ammonia if they are paying attention to the available technologies, because even like back in the 60s, the U.S. Army had a paper about ammonia fuel stations powered by small local nuclear reactors for local, like, a disattached supply chain solution to fuel needs for the military, and that was, like, back in the 60s. So a lot of this stuff, like we've been noting, has been sitting on the shelf. But batteries are okay.
Well, technology is kind of a long ways away, in my opinion, for electric cars to really be viable to replace our regular gas cars. I mean, they're good for short hops. And kind of the joke in Oregon here, as you know, Oregon is one of the few states that still will not allow you to pump your own gas. So
I remember that. Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so the joke is that if you buy an electric car, you won't be allowed to plug it in yourself.
That's funny. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, Darryl. Daniel.
It's nice for the jobs that are being created by electric vehicles in some places, like it's going to revitalize some of Michigan and some of, like, I went to a college in Western Michigan and they're getting some advanced lithium ion battery stuff there, and so they're excited. But as with technology is always transition, and they'll always have limitations. So I don't want to beat anybody over the head for buying an EV. Or if I had two cars, maybe I would get one fully electric and one that fit with the local appropriate renewable technologies to my area. For instance, maybe if we don't get ammonia immediately, maybe somebody puts in a biodiesel plant and I could say, I want to get biodiesel or yeah, algae biodiesel or something. So, and I think if we pooled our money in creative ways, we could help subsidize our purchases so that it's not per se subsidized by the government always, but if we could put together buying clubs and we could put together cooperatives and things like that that said, okay, well, let's pool our resources, buy a couple things that are helpful for the time being, and then cycle to the next technology. So, I don't know. If I get too wordy, you guys got stuff to say too. So I just go on and on. In fact, they have a name for me in the Boy Scouts. They had a service organization called the Order of the Arrow, and you get a Native American name when you get so far in the organization, and they called me. This is where I got my nickname, actually, Mockwing. It's actually short for Mockalinson Wewington Heat, which is translated high-minded babbler. So, funny.
No, we definitely appreciate your input and knowledge. And in fact, I was just there's a website I stumbled across here that I kind of wanted to put out to people. It's nh3car.com, nh3car.com. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about, I believe this is the car you're talking about earlier. And one of the things I found that's very interesting in reading up on this is apparently the car they used will work both on gasoline and ammonia. So that's a good selling point right there, I would
say. Sure. nh3car.com. I know I've been there before. That's the picture of the yellow truck. This is actually one of the sites I haven't looked all that closely at. Perhaps because I've been a little bit cautious to align myself with any of the particular moneyed vested interests so far, to say that the NH3 Fuel Association is actually an industry promoting nonprofit that's volunteer run. So I've been working mostly with the nonprofit side of it because I'm like, well, money kind of gets in the cracks of everything and kind of influences stuff in a less than ideal way sometimes, you might say, to put it nicely.
Exactly.
So anyway, that's I'll probably end up making money somewhere if I get a certain position in the midst of all this stuff, but I've had to work on it from where I was coming from, the little guy, kind of. Maybe I'll be a classic American entrepreneur story, the pull yourself up by the bootstraps kind of thing.
The American dream.
Well, that's right.
And I was just thinking, as they say on their homepage, NH3car.com is that NH3 can, I'm quoting, NH3 can serve as a fuel in both spark ignition engines powered by gasoline and compression ignited engines such as diesel. And my thinking is that because they said other teams, other design teams are working on using ammonia for diesel engines. There is an industry, if you can produce an alternative fuel to diesel that'll run in the big rigs, the average fuel consumption on a big rig is between 5 and 7 miles to the gallon.
Yeah, yeah. This stuff will work in the maritime ocean-going diesels as well. Mm-hmm. There's that's one of the cool things about it, is that it's scalable both to the large and to the small. You hear sometimes about hydrogen fuel cells powering something as small as a cell phone or personal electronics, and I think similar applications for ammonia can get that small as well. I was looking at the Future Soldier program too, with like they're looking at exoskeletons and all kinds of fancy new equipment for the soldiers in 10 to 20 years. And they were saying that they'd have a small turbine hydrocarbon generator that would produce the electricity for all these systems that the individual soldier would be wearing. And it seems like, well, if ammonia can run in a turbine, then maybe ammonia can run these individual soldier microturbines too. Don't know about that one yet, but it would seem to fit with logic or plausibility anyway.
Well, it is one of the biggest drawbacks to new technology, including even the EV cars, is how long can power last? You know, like
right.
Electricity. How big and how efficient can you make a battery?
Right. Right.
But the ammonia might be, like you say, the ammonia might just be the best alternative over hydrogen, because it is an easier to produce, apparently, and more versatile. And the explosive factor makes a difference, too.
What was that?
And the explosive factor makes,
right,
having something in your driveway that may blow up is kind of a deterrent.
Yeah. So have you guys got any additional callers to the radio show today or any other topic material? Or I don't mean to beat a dead horse on this topic, but I do enjoy it. So I can hang around or we can keep mining the resources. I guess I could plug my Model Sustainable Cities website and we could go off on that tangent, because actually all this ammonia stuff is a facilitator to what's a more central passion to my interests, which is sustainable cities.
Uh-huh. No, go ahead. Let me give out the phone numbers real quick here. We got 16 minutes left in the program. 646-721-9887. You can join us with Daniel.
Yep.
Very good.
Try to get his name right. As we do apologize for getting your name wrong all the time.
There's no problem.
Who's our guest on the program today and about alternative fuels? And chat room is open right now, www.blogtalkradio.com/KRBN, or our other chat room, which does not require an account, and you can comment as a guest on there, www.krbnradio.com. Send us an email, talk@krbnradio.com. We're all over the place, by the way. Facebook and Twitter and
cool. Yeah.
We're working
good
on
deal.
That same part. But sure, anyways, go ahead and put your website, and in fact if you want to email me a link too and I'll post it on our website.
I'll go ahead and type it in here to the chat room. Model Sustainable City.weebly.com. And that's another one of the amateur marks that I have, is I've left the website with the free website creator Weebly. I don't own stock in them or anything. It's just where I went and made the site. But actually, it's interesting, though, that you put those three words in quotes, model sustainable cities, and at least in my Google search engine, I get the number one hit. So I guess that's good. I don't know if my Google software only tells me that I'm getting the number one hit or if everybody does, because maybe Google has figured out how to make me feel good about where I search. I don't know. Because you look at the advertisements you get online, and it's like they know what you're doing. So I don't know. But anyway, that's my website where I've got a renewable ammonia corridor value cycling network engine vision. Uh-huh. It's focused on the Midwest, but what I've been trying to figure out is which cities exist at nodes of network emergence that would facilitate these ammonia test markets. And yeah, I grew up in West Central Illinois there with Macomb. It's got the history of how the idea kind of developed and bits and pieces of some of the spiritual and religious reflection. And that's not emphasized because I've got, like, if this is going to fly economically, it's got to all be scientific and technical, and then we can save our energy for talking about supernatural stuff later. But that's the content of the website. I might be revising it some this summer, but
well, in that same line, do you think that the ammonia could replace? Regarding windmills as an alternative energy is not exactly a reliable source because there's so many variable factors.
Right. Yeah, that's one of the big things that Bill Leedy, his International Renewable Hydrogen Transmission Demonstration Facility, he describes that as a means of connecting to the Great Plains Wind Energy Corridor while at the same time tying it in with ammonia, storing the electricity, and thereby being able to put in the infrastructure that can firm, he calls it firm, F-I-R-M, the renewables on an annual scale. Because even if we can get the minute-by-minute or second-by-second or millisecond, whatever, short-scale adjustments by smart grid, there's still going to be seasonal differences in the amount of energy that is produced and produced or not produced by these renewables. So, yeah, that's why in the green energy sector these days they're saying energy storage is going to be like a $20 billion industry in the next 10 or so years.
Right.
And, yeah, I'm hoping for ammonia to get a nice chunk of that market, but there's lots of good solutions that are coming online, and ammonia just is, it's a stone that hits killing two birds with one stone. Well, this is at least three birds. You got fertilizer, you've got fuel, you've got electricity storage, transmission, distribution. Oh, and here's another kicker. If you do this stuff by the coastlines, the process produces a low-grade heated water. That's to say a warmer water that's hot but not hot enough to do very much important work per se. But if you use that low-grade heat water to boost the temperature of seawater, of ocean water, then you can help facilitate desalination, which is going to be really important for the world as a lot of these coastal cities and across the globe are going to need more water. There's a lot of folks that say water is going to be a bigger flash pan issue than even energy. So that's a fourth bird, or is that the fifth bird? Whatever bird that was. Maybe it's that. Maybe that's the Sakara bird that we talked about earlier. I read that out of the chat room. Maybe I said it wrong.
Yeah, I put that on there so people could take a look at it and they wanted
right.
to.
Right.
Well, and I was thinking as well, I wonder if anybody's looked at combining the processes. Like, I know that hydrogen, as an example, takes a lot of electricity to produce, but if you had the windmills to produce the hydrogen could be used to power generators. So when and I guess what I'm saying, you can kind of start an energy cycle. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's replace your word hydrogen there with ammonia, and that's basically the strategy that Bill Leedy talks about. He's, specifically in these natural gas-fired peaker units
mm-hmm.
that the utility companies use, substitute a ammonia turbine instead of a natural gas turbine, and you've got the same thing going on, and that's just the dumbed down change the chemical, change the turbine. But if we, like you're saying, lace these together in creative ways, yeah, you get lots of opportunity for doing things that play off of each other, like the seawater. And another thing you can do with that low-grade heat water is pump it into greenhouses.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want local agriculture and you want good controlled conditions for your local agriculture, co-locate some of these processes with local greenhouses, and you boost another segment of the economy. And thankfully, there's those lower-skilled jobs in the greenhouses for the people who want them, and there's the higher-skilled technical jobs that an ammonia economy could bring, too. So it's a win-win, I think, in many ways.
I'm not sure if we asked this question or not, so if we did, please forgive me. But hydrogen, produces water as a byproduct when once it's burned. What does ammonia produce?
Yeah, water.
Just water?
Water and nitrogen, actually. The slight case of imperfect combustion, you get a few nitrous oxides that we talked about earlier with the need to have the process to handle that byproduct. And we had mentioned earlier in the radio show that one. So,
now, would that be
oxygen?
Would the byproduct have to be stored or for disposal, or could it just be discharged into
discharged? The atmosphere is 78% nitrogen. So that's one of the nice things about releasing the nitrogen back into the atmosphere is that it was there already. And that's one of the nice things about ammonia as compared to, for instance, there's Fischer-Tropsch chemical reactions that can use renewables to synthesize hydrocarbons, but you'd have to have a carbon source. So actually, these carbon storage that we might be doing underground with advanced coal generation that they pump the carbon dioxide underground, that carbon dioxide might actually become a valuable resource someday if somebody wants to use the Fischer-Tropsch reactions to manufacture a synthetic hydrocarbon.
Mm-hmm.
But if we release the carbon dioxide into the atmosphere, it becomes difficult to collect. So, and it has the climate thing. So that's one of the nice things about the nitrogen being so prevalent in the atmosphere is that it's not difficult to get the raw materials for synthesizing this energy carrier. That was just another comparison to another technology that's out there, been known for a long time, and we could even be getting benefit from lacing some of this stuff together with what we've got already. It's just, never mind. I was just going to say.
Well, I can definitely understand why you're so excited about it, because, and I do appreciate you coming on and explaining it, because there's a lot that I was not aware of, and it sounds like a very exciting and very doable alternative resource.
Yeah, great. Yeah, I've really enjoyed it, and I hope your listeners have too. Again, I'm a novice, you might say. I'm a hobbyist, an intern, yes. I don't want to say I'm much more than I got my degree actually in religion and philosophy, and that was after 2 years in the natural sciences. So I'm not an engineer, I'm not an economist, but just somebody that's dredged up a few helpful observations, I think. So if I can see some of this stuff, I'm really hopeful that lots of other people can see it too. So,
well, you coming on the show and telling everybody about it has been very helpful and brings it to their attention. And like I said, we were focusing on the electric and the hydrogen and other more known. And I guess looking at ammonia is worth taking another look at.
Sure. Cool.
Maybe a better biofuels. But anyways, you want to go ahead and plug your website again?
Yeah, that's my personal website at modelsustainablecities.weebly. That's weebly.com. Or Google in quotes the three words "model sustainable cities," close quote, and it should be the first hit.
Google is not just being nice to you; it actually is the first hit. So you're doing good.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. That's fun. All right, well, I'll be in touch with you guys over time, I suppose, and we'll see about if I make the conference reporting on that, and I like other topics too, so I'll see about tuning in and hearing what other folks are doing. And, we have a couple more minutes, but it's been fun.
It was a pleasure having you, and hope to talk to you again, Daniel.
Okay, great.
Absolutely. Keep in touch, and I'll go ahead and, like I say, later this afternoon, I'll post that website on our show page, and keep in touch. Talk at krbnradio.com, and if you make it to the conference, give us a call or do a follow up. There's your homework for you.
Yeah.
Promise
you're right.
Your name right too next time.
Okay. Yeah.
Not Dan or whatever.
Yeah. With any luck, maybe I'll become a household name too, and maybe make a little money in the. Yeah. I don't know. No. That's anyway. Okay.
All right. Well,
I'll
appreciate
go ahead and hang up, and I guess you guys can say your call letters or whatever you have to do to finish up a show. So, thanks again.
All right. Thank you, Daniel.
Blessing.
Yep.
All right, and unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. And we definitely appreciate Daniel, the topic, his suggestion last week. Great topic, great call.
Yeah.
If you have any, if you have any comments, you can send us an email, talk@caribbeanradio.com. Visit us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, we love these type of calls. We love the input from our listeners, and this is what makes the show good. So, keep them coming. Bradley, do you have any final thoughts here real quick?
Boy, just keep the calls coming, and thanks so much for everybody's support out there.
Absolutely. And we'll do it again next Wednesday, 10 a.m. Pacific time, not next week.
If you like today's show, please let us know by visiting us on Facebook and clicking on the Like button. You can also get show updates on Twitter and on our website at www.krbnradio.com. This is KRBN Internet News Talk Radio.